Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. I am joined by a guest who has only one name, Kennelly. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Scott. I'm really happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you on. Tell the people a little bit about yourself.
Okay, so I'm the updates editor at Wirecutter, which is a product review site that's owned by the New York Times. I know a lot of my colleagues from Wirecutter have been on this podcast before. Yes. So, like, Jackie Chang was our editor-in-chief. She's done a couple episodes. Her husband, Clint. You know, Andrew Cunningham and Dan Capel and Courtney Wilburn, they all work for us now. So I thought I'd come on, too, and talk about this exciting Voyager episode.
That's right. I'm just gathering Wirecutter people onto my podcast for some nefarious purpose that will become clear once I've collected them all.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is. So anytime I have someone on from the Wirecutter, I have to ask the annoying question of what is your favorite thing that you have interacted with for the Wirecutter?
Ooh, well, my answer is always the thing that I think is most useful that we have is like the USB battery packs to recharge your phone. Mm-hmm. I like get very anxious when my cell phone's going to die. So like right now, the Jackery Bolt, which has been the pick for a while until everybody switches to USB-C. I really like that. That thing's top notch. Go get it.
And I was...
Use the affiliate link.
Yes, use the Wirecutter affiliate link, everyone. I was for a long time skeptical of the external battery for a cell phone because I don't know why, because I'm a fool. And then I went on an international trip and I thought before I go, I should get myself one of these things just in case. And it changed my life. So they're double plus good. That's what I say. I don't know why I've said that, but I never say double plus good. But anyway, it doesn't matter. So let's not spend more time talking about gadgets. People say, hey, Scott, how come it always takes you so long to get to the Star Trek on your Star Trek podcast? So give the people what they want. Would you consider yourself a Star Trek fan?
I would. I'm a pretty big Star Trek fan. I guess like Next Gen was airing like when I was like a baby, and my dad would watch it while like trying to get me to go to sleep. So it's like back in like my subconscious, it's there. And then I really got into it when like, you know, the new TNN got all the, which like eventually became Spike and now is like the Paramount Network or something. But like when I was in middle school, they like bought all the Next Gen episodes and would air like endless marathons of them. It felt like they'd show like 4 hour blocks of TNG, and I would watch that a lot through middle school. And then like bought all the DVDs. I like all like kind of like that age of like late 90s, early 2000s TV sci-fi. But Next Gen's really one of my favorites.
So let's see if I have a theory that people's favorite Star Trek series is the one that hits them when they're young, the first one that they watch. So according to my theory, then your favorite Star Trek series should be TNG. Is that correct?
Yeah, Next Gen's definitely my favorite. That's the one that I've definitely seen every episode multiple times. I still like will watch it on Netflix when I like can't get to sleep. I'll go back and watch the Next Gen episodes because they're just like programmed into me.
Just like when you were a baby.
This is kind of a controversial opinion, but I do like Enterprise a good amount. I think I was like a little bit too young to watch most of Voyager when it was first airing, and DS9. So I've like gone back and watched most, but not all of DS9 and Voyager. But Enterprise I watched as it was on and was like very sad when it was ending. And it took until I was a little bit older to be like, Enterprise wasn't that good. Yeah.
So who's your favorite character from TNG?
Yeah. I think I'm going to say Q. I really like Q. He's like, he's a huge jerk, but he's also like kind of like deserves to be a jerk because he's like super powerful. Mm-hmm. I think the Q-Picard relationship is really cool. Like, there are some, like, you know, like the awkward, goofy Q episodes, but, like, All Good Things and Tapestry are, like, really, really great. You know, we're going to, when we get into this episode, we're going to talk about the afterlife and Harry's experience in the afterlife, which is not as cool as maybe Picard when he's hanging out with Q. But I really like all the Q episodes.
I like the Q. Q, I enjoy as well. He's kind of a, I wouldn't say controversial, but I think that there, you either love Q or you hate Q. There's no in between with a Q, I believe. And I love Q. because I think it's so interesting that he is omnipotent, as he often reminds everyone, and yet he is fascinated with humans because they have, and Picard in particular, or Janeway later, because they have, they are finite and they can feel emotions and make connections that he is just incapable of, and he doesn't understand it.
Yeah, yeah, like all the like characters, like Data or Spock or the Doctor or whoever, who's like the characters who are like somewhat beyond humans but are envious of like the intrinsic humanity of them, like are always like really good for telling Star Trek stories and telling Star Trek episodes. So yeah, I don't know, I kind of like Q's version of that.
And that's how you can tell that all the Star Trek episodes have been written by humans, because everyone wants to be a human in these. So human-centric. And I do. So what do you? What about the? I'm assuming the John Delancey Q is your favorite, but then Corbin Burnson is Q also for Q too. He's a. And then there's another, like, Q has a son, right? Q whatever.
Yeah, yeah, man. Yeah, I remember, like, I didn't even put together that, like, oh, it's the dude from the third baseman from Major League is the Q who saves him in that Deja Q, the one where he loses his powers. And I was like, yeah, man.
I think,
and like the dad from Psych.
Yes, the dad from Psych, or he's from LA Law, right? Wasn't that his big thing? Yeah.
I mean, that is before my time.
Well, yes, it was not before my time, but I was probably, I don't know, like 6 or 7. So I was not interested in LA Law, but, it was a big deal. So enough. This is not random LA Law.
Yeah.
So look for that on the Incomparable Network coming next summer. It's not, we're here to talk about not a TNG episode, not even an Enterprise episode, but, a random Voyager episode, in particular, a first season episode of Voyager, which, you know, the first season of any Star Trek series can be rocky.
A very first season episode, yes, of Voyager.
It is the 9th episode of the run. It is called Emanations. And if, you know, I have actually grown to like Voyager more as I watch more episodes of Voyager. I do not, as longtime listeners of this show, enjoy Harry Kim in any form. And this is a Harry Kim-centric episode. Although, spoiler alert, Harry Kim dies in this episode. So yeah, that makes it okay.
Yeah, Harry dies. Not for long. No. The Doctor does bring him back. But he does go into the box and get himself killed. So
he does, which I thought was... well, we'll get to it. That's we'll save the death for Harry Kim.
I can defend Harry a little bit on this episode. I think my opinion on Harry is like incredibly neutral. He just kind of is. I would say that, like, yeah, my familiarity with Voyager is not as strong, but I do remember I'd seen this one before, because I take issue with like a lot of the technobabble in it, which we'll get to. But yeah, I studied physics before I became editor at the Wirecutter somehow. And so there's some of the science stuff that we can get into.
All right. Well, I look forward to getting into it, because I didn't notice any of it. Well, I did. So the first thing that I thought was weird about this episode, we'll get into it, is that, so they're scanning for asteroids, right? Or they're scanning asteroids. And they're like, oh, guess what? All these asteroids have a Class M atmosphere. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that's not quite how gravity works. So,
and I feel like that would be a big deal.
Yeah, well, that's a big deal. There's also a big deal that there's the 247th element on it, which is really, really big. They're you know, that's not really how like nuclear fusion works. Is that Because they say that it's naturally, or they think it's naturally occurring. And, you know, based on our current understanding of, like, you know, how elements are formed in stars, which basically all elements that everything is made out of came from a star, either during its normal life cycle, which is capable of basically making every element up to iron, which I think is the 49th element. And then when stars go supernova, they can make all the other elements that go up to 92, which is uranium. And then any element over 92, there's like no natural process we know of that can make heavier elements than having 92 protons. And this one has 247 protons.
That's a lot
and
more.
It's like naturally coming from these like normal aliens' bodies. And it's like, that's... not how the strong nuclear force works.
Well, you see, there's a, well, maybe because of this element, these asteroids have gained an atmosphere.
Yeah,
and I think
sucking enough air down onto them. They're so heavy.
these asteroids have an atmosphere because they didn't want to put the characters in spacesuits, and they wanted to find these aliens in asteroids. That's what. The real thing was, from a production standpoint, I'm assuming, because you've got to see their beautiful faces when they're in the asteroid.
Yeah, Robbie Beltran is not wearing a space helmet ever. Got to show that hole.
That's right.
that tattoo off.
Yeah, they spent a lot of time in makeup, so you want to see that tattoo. Damn it. And I will say, so here's another thing. I like Chakotay. And I think that he does a fine job as acting as Chakotay. And this episode, it kind of lays the groundwork for, because you know, this is a first season episode, so you're watching it. This is the ninth one you've seen. You think, hey, that Chakotay guy, he might be interesting. He seems very interested in archaeology. He's very respectful of the dead, perhaps a little too respectful. That could be interesting. And then you get like another six seasons, and you know what? Chakotay's not very interesting. They don't really do anything with him.
Yeah, well, they're definitely, like, doing the, like, laying the whole, like, he's Native American and, like, very respectful of all this, like, life and natural processes thing, which, like, is a big part of his character. He's carried over from the, like, Wesley Crusher becomes a god episode.
Mm-hmm.
But there is also the thing that, like, Chakotay and B'Elanna are, like, terrorists.
Yes.
And they are, like, basically a month and a half ago, they were, like, really just killing Cardassians all the time, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they just, now they're just like, B'Elanna's like a big nerd, and she's like, oh my god, there's a new element. I'm super excited about this, Captain. And I'm like, this is a quick switch for you to like go from that one thing to just being like, yeah, I'm a Starfleet officer now.
I love following orders. Yeah, that is the, so this is, people are tired of hearing me talk about this, but I feel like, the story of Voyager is wasted opportunities, because they had this great kind of conflict that they could have had with the, trying to integrate the crew, but they really deal with that in like two episodes and then never again do we discuss it. And then they have this whole thing of, you know, the Voyager is lost in space, which I think is great. And then we're trying to get home, all great. But at the end of every episode, because this was filmed in the 90s, everything resets, and so nothing really matters.
Yeah, they always, like, I remember they always called it, like, on the internet, they called it hitting the reset button at the end of every episode, and it's like, yeah, it's just they hadn't really made that, they, like, eventually make that jump in, like, Battlestar, where they kind of, like, Ron Moore, like, wanted to do all this stuff, and, like, they wouldn't let him, so he's like, I'm gonna make my own show, and I'm gonna actually have the ship fall apart by the end.
Yeah, I'll show you. And I guess there was the studio, I assume, just thought that, well, people, and this was the problem with Deep Space Nine as well for them. They were like, well, people don't want to come into an episode and have to have seen the episode before it. We want them to be able to just watch this as a standalone thing so that when it's in syndication and they're running 4-hour blocks of it out of order, it's fine.
Which is now like the opposite of the way they make TV now, which is like, it's basically a 10-hour movie of Game of Thrones that you get every 18 months.
Exactly. And if you miss, if you just watch like the fourth episode of the third series of Game of Thrones, it's not going to make a lot of sense.
Not really.
You're like, who is this Jon Snow character? Tell me more of this. He knows nothing. See, I watch other shows than Star Trek people. But anyway, let's get back to Voyager. So we haven't even talked about what they're doing on this. They have found this trans-uranic element that everyone's super excited about it, even though it doesn't make any scientific sense. They beam over to non-scientific sensical asteroids that have atmosphere for no reason that nobody seems super interested in. And it's full of dead people. There are dead people all over the place. And this is the other thing that I had a problem with. So Chakotay, as I just said earlier, is like, oh, let's respect the dead. Harry Kim is like, hey, let's just knock a couple of these corpses open and see what we find, like a pinata. And B'Elanna doesn't really care.
She's over it.
She is. She's like, whatever. The element, they find out the element is coming from these corpses for some reason.
Which also does not make sense. There would be like a massive amount of energy just like folding upon each of these bodies if that was true, but whatever.
Yeah. A lot of this setup does not make any sense. Although I do think the episode itself is asking interesting questions, right? It's dealing with death, which is a subject that is of great interest to everyone who's alive. So, but the way they get there, questionable. But... So Chakotay, they're scientists, right? I think one of the things that they really want to try drive home, although they don't do it all that well, is that Chakotay may be a terrorist and may be a Native American, but he's also a scientist. And so he's interested in science. You know, we know Captain Janeway was a science officer. These are their Star Trek, their Starfleet officers. They're all up with the science, right? So this is a big scientific discovery. And Chakotay says, well, they're dead bodies, so we should respect them, which I'm like, okay, that makes sense. You don't want to, you know, steal one and cut it open is basically because that's what Harry Kim suggests they do. But they have tricorders and they could scan them, which I think you would do. And Janeway is like, yeah, do that. And Chakotay's like, well, I really don't think we should even scan them. We should just look at them.
Because they've never used a tricorder to scan a dead body before.
Exactly. Already use the sensors to scan these dead bodies.
Yeah. And B'Elanna basically is like, well, they're dead. That's all I can tell without using my tricorder. Because she's just like so dependent on technology at this point that she just can't figure it out. She's like, I'm done. I don't know what to do without my little iPhone.
That's right. And, so she's
kind of like me.
It's true. I wouldn't know what to do.
Gotta have the external battery.
Exactly. And she wants to play, you know, Angry Birds or whatever. Candy Crush, I guess that's what the kids play. Candy Crush. B'Elanna is not interested. And also, this is the last scene, I believe, that we have B'Elanna in. She is so uninterested that she wanders away and nobody gets her again. But they find out, OMG. These dead bodies, we just have to look at them. Chakotay makes some suppositions based on very little evidence. But he seems very adamant about them. And then is this when, and suddenly, this is how you know you're watching a Star Trek episode, right? A subspace disturbance opens up in the cave.
The vacuole.
Yes, the vacuole. Subspace vacuole. They got a beam out of there because that's no good. And they beam out, but oh no, Harry Kim is lost. Yeah. By Seska.
And then they get the body, right? They get a body.
Which is interesting. So they don't get Harry Kim. They get a dead body. And Harry Kim wakes up basically in a coffin, an alien's coffin. And I will say that the aliens are performing, what are they called? The Venori? Venori, I believe.
Venori.
They are, it's clear they've just ended kind of this death ritual, obviously. And they open up I guess they hear hot knocking, right? Harry Kim knocks.
And so trying to get out.
Yeah, exactly. They open this sarcophagus looking thing and they're all a little shocked, but they're not really. Like if I went to a funeral
and Harry Kim popped out of the coffin,
I would be freaked out. They were not sufficiently freaked out for me. That's all I'm saying.
Well, they have the little extra nostrils on their face, and just like maybe they just really like flare their extra nostrils, and that's like how they're showing, like, oh God, what's this guy doing here?
That's true. They are an alien race, so I shouldn't judge. Although Harry Kim, super judgy, almost immediately.
he's gonna tell them all their rituals are. are problematic, but it's not my place in first contact situations. we don't tell you anything about what's going on, but yeah, I really don't respect your life choices.
Yeah, everything you do is dumb, but you didn't hear it from me because I'm supposed to be respectful.
yeah, prime directive of all.
Exactly. So he wakes up and, oh no, people are a little freaked out. Everyone on Voyager is like, what has happened to Harry Kim? But they're like, this corpse is pretty fresh.
Yeah. Let's take it down to our computer program, who's our entire medical staff, have him cut the tumor off her brainstem, just put a new brainstem on that he replicated, having never seen this species before, and then just like wake her up and then be like, hey, I'm Catherine Janeway. Welcome to my starship. And she eventually freaks the f*** out.
She does. She has an appropriate amount of freak out.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that. I also thought there's a lot of ethical quandaries here that I don't know if it is appropriate for them to resurrect this person.
Yeah, after Chakotay being very like, we have to respect these people, we can't even scam them, they really quickly turn to just like, oh, bring her back to life, it'll be fine.
Maybe she'll tell us where Harry Kim is. Because why not?
Yeah.
And she doesn't know, by the way, where Harry Kim is.
No, she does not.
And she does not enjoy where she is. So this is, we find out pretty early that the Venori believe that when they die, they go to someplace called the Next Emanation, which is, for them, not a spiritual place, but another physical dimension where they go and they are with their families, like literally physically with their families somewhere.
Yeah, and you get like a new body, you get like new eyes, new everything, just like a full reboot. But yeah, everybody's there and they're just like existing in physical forms,
which is interesting. And you know, and there as I was watching this, I don't know much about Mormonism, so any Mormons who are listening, please don't get upset. They opened a temple in Philadelphia, which is a beautiful building, before they consecrate it, or whatever the proper term is, they close it. If you're not a Mormon, you're not supposed to go into Mormon temples. But before they do whatever, you know, ritual it is to consecrate it, they have an open house where you can go in as a non-Mormon and tour the building, because they spend lots of money on these buildings and they want people to see them. And then I assume the thinking is maybe you'll like the building so much that you will turn into a Mormon. I did not convert to Mormonism, but I found out that the Mormons believe that when they die, they go to heaven, and waiting in heaven is all their family, all their ancestors, everybody here, and you're all together. So I could not help but draw parallels between the big difference, though, is I do not believe that Mormons believe they are. It's like another physical plane. Like they are not physically there. They are. It's a spiritual thing.
Yeah.
And so it seemed to track. It doesn't seem.
Yeah.
Everybody. Well, Harry Kim thinks it's ridiculous, but, you know, to each their own.
Yeah. But like when Petra is there on Voyager, that, you know, like both Janeway and Kes are like, well, yeah, I know that you're like your brother that you expected to see and tell him about how his kids grew up. I know you expected to like see him here, but like you're not dead. Maybe when you do die, then you will see him. It might happen, I guess.
Who knows?
And she's like, no, but there's enough evidence here that like what I thought was going to happen definitely does not happen. So even if some other thing happens, that's not what I want. My belief is still totally shattered, and I'm freaking out because I'm hanging out with all these aliens and they're like, it's going to be fine. And I'm like, no, I had brain cancer and now I'm just here.
Right. Because it is, for them, it is very, like, it's very strict what happens. Like, you go into this machine, we find out a subspace vacuole appears, and it takes you to what they think is the next emanation where you are back with your family. And she went into this machine, she was taken, and she is on Voyager. So not what she signed up for.
Yeah. I mean, if I was on the Enterprise D, I'd be psyched.
But exactly. But you don't want to be on Voyager. But at least Harry Kim's not there.
Yeah. Well.
And Neelix, actually, Neelix does not appear in this episode, so that's good, too.
Yeah, I felt good for Petra, because I thought for a second they were going to send her to be like, oh, Neelix will make you feel better. Neelix always makes people feel better. They'd be like, oh, my God, if I got to heaven, and I'm just hanging out with a Neelix.
You start to think, does our culture have a hell, and am I in it? Because this guy, oh, boy. And so, yeah, that's she's over there. Petra, she's on the Voyager, freaking out and not getting what she was hoping she would get. On Vori, people are surprised that a Harry Kim popped out of their coffin. And so they think, so this is, I think this episode has some interesting things to it. They think, well, this guy, there are two ways I feel like you can, as a person who believes in the next emanation, you can interpret Harry Kim appearing where a dead body once was. Either A, your belief in the next emanation is completely wrong, and it's just another place in the galaxy, and he was transported here, and you're just sending corpses to an asteroid.
Yeah.
Or the next emanation is a place where Harry Kim lives, and he came back accidentally, and this is your one opportunity to find out more about the next emanation. And that is the one that they choose.
they send him to the thanatologist?
Yes.
Is that what it is?
Something like that. And who is, you know, they study death, like, and is like a priest kind of.
Yeah, he's like a priest doctor all mixed into one.
And he is super into scanning Harry Kim.
Yeah, he definitely kind of wants to dissect Harry Kim a little bit, which Harry doesn't seem to be like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Harry's like, no, no. And the other thing, so who am I to judge the Vori? But the Vori clearly have this whole structure around death, right? Where, you know, you go to this place and you wait for your turn in the machine. And we could talk about the implications of that. But there are rooms. And you would think, if I were building a death house where you wait your turn for your death machine, I would only have private rooms. So
and
that,
you wouldn't,
you know, you could have your family.
Sorry.
So you wouldn't, so you could, you know, you'd hang out with your family. You wouldn't have overlapping families together. And what I wouldn't do is if an alien shows up in a coffin that normally doesn't happen, I would just stick them in with someone waiting their turn.
Yeah, because there's this other guy, Hattel. Is that's his name, right?
I think so.
And his wife are just hanging out, and he's getting ready to move on, and they just introduce this new element of basically, like, what you would kind of believe is, like, an angel, and they just, like, stick him in a room with him, and it's like, hey, here's Harry, he's here to tell you about the next emanation, and it doesn't, like, go great for Hattel, does it?
No, they're like, you could talk to Harry, but you're still on for 2:30 death tube, so... and this is where we learned another layer to the Vori beliefs, right? Is that, everyone, I assume, on the planet believes in the next emanation. And so if you are, suffering from some kind of fatal illness, like, Petra had brain cancer, so she had decided that she did not want to suffer the indignities of, slowly dying from brain cancer. So she went, shuffled off to the next emanation, on her own. This guy is apparently he had some kind of accident and he wasn't, you know, he's being a drain on his family's resources. So he's decided, although later he says really his family has decided, that it is time for him to die. So he's going to the next emanation.
Mm-hmm. And his wife seems very excited that he's going to the next emanation.
She seems a little too excited.
Yeah, there might be somebody else that's in line as soon as Hattel goes on to the next emanation that she might be a little bit excited to see in this emanation. So,
which is, you know, if you were, it is a believable to me that in a society where this is the setup, you would have people who are believers in it, who manipulate other people who they know are true believers to kind of make their lives easier, right? You're like, I know, you know, you'll be fine in a couple of years, but that limp is really annoying. So maybe the next emanation, is your best bet.
Yeah. It's the right place for you. So, yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I think it's like, you know, it's a cool issue. I think that there's like an episode I do really like, from Next Gen that kind of deals with like, a slightly different version of the same problem is the one where Lakshmana falls in love with the scientist who lives on the planet where everybody is like has to commit ritual suicide on their 60th birthday mm-hmm. in the like Logan's Run times two planet. and I always think that episode's like super fascinating. And then I had kind of forgotten that this episode has like a way darker like version of it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was cool. It's like, it was one of those things that like this one, it seems like this one plot line is the one, like I was like reading the Memory Alpha and was this plot line was the one that like, what's his name? Brendan Bragda really started with for this episode. And then all the other stuff kind of comes in to like make it less serious. But it's one that like, I'd almost want to see like the Black Mirror version of this specific plot line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we don't learn much about Hetrel mm-hmm. except that everybody other than him is really excited for him to die. Mm-hmm. And he was going to do it because he totally believed in the next emanation. And, if you believe truly that when you die, it's just a stepping stone to a better place where you'll meet everybody that came before you, it's not really that big a deal, right? So
yeah, you totally do it. Like his until he meets Harry, it makes sense that right. he would like be like totally on board with this. But as soon as you meet Harry, then immediately you'd be like, yeah, I'm going to bail and like smoke weed with my friends in the like mountains, which is basically what he does.
And I think that that's the right choice because it's no good. He is, he reads the writing on the wall and he's like, I don't need this. And this is, so there's a bunch of stuff with on Voyager. They're trying to figure out where, Harry Kim is and they can't really figure him out. And they find that the subspace, vacuoles are attracted to the warp core, but none of it really matters.
No, it doesn't. B'Elanna does come back and she's like, kind of like, I got to keep the shield on the warp core and whatever. But otherwise, something bad will happen that will make this episode end in 45 minutes.
Exactly. And you're right. It's just there to distract us from the very dark reality that Harry Kim has brought upon this whole society, frankly.
Which is basically like totally destroying their planet-wide like belief system.
Yes.
Which like you would think that like that there would be like whatever religious dissidents, but like that's kind of never the way planets in Star Trek work, is
they're
that
all one
like,
thing.
Everybody is all one thing on the planet. But it's like you'd think that like this guy is gonna like just be like, yeah, I'm just gonna hang out in the mountains for a while, but then like you could come back to this planet 5 years later and he's like, the whole thing's a lie. Don't you're just gonna get beamed on to some asteroid. This guy Harry told me about it. It's like, Harry, this is why we have the Prime Directive, my dude.
That's right. Harry Kim has become the prophet of the new religion.
Yeah.
Throw off the shackles of the death machine. Embrace the Harry Kim. And then their society crumples.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. And then, so they really, for whatever reason, the Voyager crew wants Harry Kim back, so they're trying to get him. And so I will give Harry Kim credit for really trusting in the Doctor's ability to resurrect dead people. Because
once again, the Doctor's not a person, and they've only been like operating with like eventually by like season six Doctor, I'd be like, okay, I trust this guy. But right now, it's like, in like the break glass in case of emergency, like holographic program that they have instead of a real doctor. And Harry's like, yeah, I mean, medical technology on our ship's pretty advanced. So I'm sure I'll be fine if I like commit ritual suicide and get beamed halfway across the quadrant.
Yeah, I didn't. And I will say Robert Picardo, who plays the doctor, it's always interesting to jump back to a first season episode and see how differently he plays the doctor.
Yeah.
Cause there's really no, very little affect. He's kind of just, he's got the scornful, attitude and poor bedside manner, but it's like lack of personality. And to your point, if this is the ninth episode, he's still just kind of the emergency medical hologram, even though everyone totally, he can just resurrect people left and right. So
yeah.
He's really good at it.
Yeah. It's like Crusher's going to be out of a job.
That's right. So that's Harry's daring plan. Which is not a bad plan. So it turns out, luckily for Harry, that the Vori have to wrap themselves up in death shrouds.
Which I was confused by, because in the beginning they say that like all the bodies are naked. Like Chakotay makes a point of being like all the bodies are naked, and then also when Hommel's wrapping himself, he's like, my father used this shroud, my grandfather used this shroud. So is it like you go in the thing in the shroud and then it transports your body but leaves the shroud behind, I guess? Well,
I was watching this with my wife and she said the same thing. She was like, where does that shroud go? And I said, because it's his father's shroud. And I said, well, I guess it doesn't take the shroud, but then that would mean Harry Kim's uniform shouldn't go with him either.
But I mean, if just finding Harry in the coffin would be weird enough, but if you found Harry with no clothes on in the coffin, then all those aliens, they would have freaked out when they popped the lid and he's just there.
That's true. Many more questions are like, what were you doing in that coffin naked with my relative? It's a long story.
With Petra, who also, we kind of glossed over this, but like, they think they can send Petra back, and then they just kill her.
We forgot about that.
Seska is just like, oops, I think I lost her pattern. And then she comes back, and she's got the cobwebs all over her. Yep, and
she's dead.
Kes is like, I know we brought her back to life like 5 seconds ago, but I guess she ended up where we were putting her anywhere.
I guess she's dead now. Yeah, I thought that was – this episode is – I feel like the kernel of this episode is very interesting. But it wanders in its treatment of the dead, really. Because, I didn't understand that. Like, she's dead now, but we can't resurrect her. She was going to be dead anyway, so I guess it's a wash. So I guess we'll transport her into the asteroid?
Yep.
Is that it? I don't
know. Yeah, that's kind of what happened.
And then then they have this mumbo jumbo where, oh no, when they die, we've noticed a weird energy discharge and their essence goes into the planet's rings. So maybe they're really all together in the next emanation. Who knows?
Yeah.
Seems unlikely to me, but maybe. I don't know what happens when I die. I haven't done it yet, unlike Harry Kim. So, segue. Kim climbs into, he wraps himself in the shroud that we're not sure how it works, but I assume it's still in the coffin after Harry Kim disappears.
Mm-hmm.
We see Harry Kim actually get killed. Interesting.
Yeah.
There's like a two red glow sticks come out and attach to your neck and you die.
Shoot him in the neck, man.
That's right. And then he materializes very luckily for everybody on Voyager. And they beam him to sickbay. The doctor resurrects him and everyone's like, hey, Harry Kim, don't worry. You're back on Voyager. Good as new.
Lana was like, definitely ready to leave him behind. She was like, the ship might blow up. Let's get out of here. And like, I'm okay with my girl Belana being like, never really liked that Harry guy anyway.
Well, you know, as Spock says, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. So, you know, you've got a ship full of people, and if it's going to be destroyed, waiting around for Harry Kim, you just leave. But luckily for Harry Kim, the very last disturbance was Harry Kim, and so they could leave with Harry Kim, who has been resurrected by the doctor. And then our final scene is Harry Kim and Janeway chatting about death and what happens afterward. And Harry Kim's like, you know, I'm totally ready for action, which seems weird. And Janeway's like, well, just take 2 days off. You just died, for heaven's sake.
Yeah, that was some like very like strict parenting that Harry has like yet to like kind of get out of his system, that he's like, yeah, I can go to work tomorrow, it's no problem. Janeway's like, you just died.
Maybe
take the weekend.
That's right.
It's like she's like, oh, there's like a month and you gotta like go to counseling, you really like, should work through this. She's like,
probably should.
Harry, really stop to smell the roses. Take 2 days off.
2 whole days of unstructured time, Harry. And he really should seek counseling, I think. I feel like this is a big deal.
He's ready to be at his post. That's how he works through his trauma.
It works for some people, I suppose. I feel like Starfleet is just full of broken people because these people have all kinds of traumatic experiences that they never really work through. Look at Jean-Luc Picard. He was a Borg. He was four lights. Like he lived a whole lifetime in like an hour.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't talk about any of it.
He had Spock's dad in his brain.
Yeah, this is a lot for one person to handle. And the funny thing...
But he cries with his brother in the vineyard, and then it's all out of his system.
That's all he needs. And I was reading, I think the synopsis for this episode on Memory Alpha says, Harry Kim dies for the first time in this episode.
Yeah, because Harry does, like, die several times, right? Like, he dies does. In, like, Year of Hell and stuff.
He's an old hat at dying, so I guess maybe he's just made of sterner stuff than I, because I feel like I would need to take at least 3 days to deal with that.
Well, once you die once, that's dramatic, but it gets easier every single time.
Well, that makes sense. So, and that's the end. We've got a Harry Kim back. We've got, one can assume, a horribly broken society left in his wake.
Where Harry Kim is like the leader of the new Reformation or whatever.
That's right. And it is unclear to me, and maybe you picked up on this, if those aliens were in fact from a different dimension or just a different location in the quadrant.
Yeah, there is some of the stuff of like the technobabble that is like half baked. It definitely felt like I've seen better technobabble-y episodes, mm-hmm. which is something that I like to think about, is like how real the technobabble is. Mm-hmm. I guess my assumption was that they just like are on another planet somewhere else in the quadrant, but I might be assuming that because I have like too much of the Starfleet mind, and maybe they really were from a different like dimension, which nuclear physics works differently, so that like super dense like atoms can form just like in your skin or whatever. Yeah, I just kind of thought they were just on another planet and beaming through these vacuoles.
That's what I thought, but I do think it's they every once in a while they mention a dimension. I feel like there was a throwaway line, and I feel like if they had made that. And this is the portion in which I rewrite the episode we watch. I feel like if they had made that a stronger point that, you know, they scan Harry Kim or there's something and they're like, oh, you actually were in a different dimension. Then it kind of adds another level of sadness for the Vori, right? Because they are half right, but not quite right.
Yeah. I think it's like kind of there is a lot of like stuff in this episode that I almost like wanted to see in like a separate short story or like a Black Mirror episode or something where it wasn't so bound with some of the rules that are part of Star Trek, mm-hmm. and that you could really like kind of explore any of these ideas about the afterlife individually. I think that they were cool. And like, I like this episode a lot more than I kind of expected when you sent it to me and we're like, it's a Harry Kim episode where he dies. I was like, oh, cool. I'm super excited to talk about this one. But yeah, I think that especially the storyline about the guy whose family is like, it'll be fine it'll be better for you and better for us when you go to the next emanation.
Everybody wins. Like,
yeah. It's like, it makes sense if you believe it, but then you realize like, oh, all the confirmation I had that this is the way things work. Actually, maybe I'm getting the short end of the stick.
Right. So, and there could have been more conflict where he's like, well, listen, lovely wife of mine, Harry Kim here, who is an angel from the next emanation, tells me that really it's just an asteroid where my dead body ends up. So I'm not so into it. And then she could be like, well, he's just leading you down the wrong path. He's a heretic. And, you know, there could have been a lot of they could have spent their whole time really focused on that, which is, I think, what Brendan Braga probably wanted to do. But everybody else was like, it's a little dark.
Yeah. Jerry Taylor was like, gotta pull your punch a little bit, man. This is like a lot for like the ninth episode on the UPN.
That's right. Let's just make it a little lighter. I mean, we could still make it all about death, but a little lighter. I will say, and I agree with you, because I thought not only is this a Harry Kim-centric episode, it is a first season episode, so I am always approach first season episodes of any series, except for the original series, with great trepidation, because they're usually not great. But this episode, I feel like, was much better than I thought it was going to be. It's not a great episode by any means, but it has the bones to be a great episode.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's almost like if the it almost feels like they want. I think that even on Memory Alpha, they said like they wanted to do it on next gen and couldn't make it work. And they were like, "Well, we have a whole new cast. We can try and make it work." And they like get close to it, but it's not. There's still like a couple things like Element 247 that are like, "Ah, why is this? This is making it weird."
Why is this a thing? Like, if this was like a sixth season TNG episode, yeah. That would probably be a Picard episode. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel like it would have been much better.
Like Tapestry.
Exactly. Just watch Tapestry is really what we're saying.
Yeah, watch Tapestry. Watch the Lakshwana episode with the guy.
Inner Light.
Restarting his son.
It's kind of like this too, so watch that. And I mean, you can watch this too if you like. I mean, it's not a bad episode by any means.
Yeah.
But similar things have been done in Star Trek better. And the one thing that kind of makes it unique, they kind of gloss over because, as we said, super dark.
Yeah.
And that's not where Star Trek was at this point. So
yeah.
Maybe Star Trek Discovery, they can come back to this planet.
Disco episode about this.
Exactly. Well, Canelli, thank you so much for joining me and talking about Voyager.
Thanks for having me. Yeah.
It was my pleasure.